Hey, good morning. Today, as you mentioned, I'm just going to talk about a component of a larger study. So I'm focusing on the quantitative findings among females. But at the end, if you want me to discuss how this compares to the findings among men, I'd be happy to go into that. As I talk about acceptance throughout the presentation, I'm really talking about intent to receive the vaccine, so not actual uptake of the vaccine series. Of course, I'm a doctoral student, no disclosures. So as you guys are probably well aware, there's major global health disparities in terms of cervical cancer, and 80% of cases occur in developing countries. So in the literature, these countries, these settings have been underrepresented in HPV vaccine acceptance. And the Asia Pacific region in particular has been underrepresented. So in a review I just finished this summer, I found that only 9 of the region's 27 countries had been represented. And it wasn't necessarily the countries that had the highest cervical cancer burden. It was Australia, New Zealand, Korea, and so forth. So I think the field is moving toward addressing this gap, but we're not quite there yet. And the Philippines definitely fits this description as a high cervical cancer country, and that's both in terms of mortality and incidence compared to world and U.S. rates. And even compared to Southeast Asian neighbors is high, and second only in incidence to Cambodia and Myanmar. And the comparable graph to this in terms of mortality is second only to Cambodia. So we have a country with high need. And so why is cervical cancer so problematic in the Philippines? Well, in terms of mortality, it's really a lack of tertiary care. So women have low financial accessibility and geographic accessibility to services after they're diagnosed. And probably more importantly is their inaccessibility of secondary screening. So Pap testing is pretty infrequent. And 3 out of 4 cases in the Philippines are diagnosed at an advanced stage. So we're not catching cervical cancer early there. So in a setting like this, a primary prevention strategy really is necessary. And in 2009, the Philippine Department of Health approved the use of Gardasil and Cervarix. And this was about 6 months before we did our study in the summer of 2009. So I've already mentioned the purpose of the study, to address attitudinal, social, and behavioral correlates to acceptance among a community-based sample of women. The sample for the study came from the Central Visayan region of the Philippines and 3 communities right outside of Cebu. And the project was really ran by a group of community-based research assistants. So we had 6 core team members and then 14 additional staff to help us just navigate logistics and politics there in the communities. And the community-based research assistants were involved in the study from its inception and the idea to address cervical cancer all the way through to the interpretation of results. So we really tried to make this a community-based participatory approach to the study. We began the study with a qualitative data collection in the form of focus groups, and I can talk more about that at the end. But this really provided some standalone insight, but it also helped us develop a more comprehensive survey. So we developed the survey in collaboration with our staff in English, and then we translated it into Cebuano and back-translated it to ensure that they were comparable. We also took the informed consents and translated those in the same way, and then just took off the signature lines to make sure that things were anonymous. So these surveys were self-administered in groups, and I'll talk about that in just a second, and then all of the women who participated were reimbursed 100 pesos. So this seems low, but we had to adjust it to local wages, so we weren't coercive. No, actually, let me go back. I'll discuss the group setting thing now. So these women were recruited through recruitment flyers that were distributed throughout the communities. And what we did is we said, meet us here at this time, at this location, to take a survey about women's health and sexual health. And we had some pre-established locations in community centers and churches. And this is a non-traditional way, really, to collect data. Instead of going one-on-one surveys, we did it in group settings. And about 20 women would show up in the first few sessions, and I think they were skeptical about the American researchers coming in. But by the end, we had 90 people showing up in these groups. So it really was an effective strategy in reaching the population. And this method was really referred to us by our community-based staff, They felt that if we went on a one-on-one basis, that women would feel the need to say yes to everything and just agree with the researcher, and that in a group setting, they were more empowered to disagree or to indicate negative intent with the vaccine. On the survey, we had 6 outcome measures. And you know, most HPV vaccine acceptance studies look at one item and they say, how likely would you be to receive the vaccine? And we found in our focus groups that this would not capture any variance at all, and women would always say very likely. So to capture some variance, we decided to use 6 measures, and each measure just had a different price in it. We grouped the 2 lowest prices, the 2 moderate prices, and the 2 high prices to look at acceptance at these different price strata. And then we looked at demographic, behavioral, and healthcare-related correlates, and then we had 2 checklist-style items that provided some qualitative data or qualitative aspect to this quantitative research. And we basically asked women who would be influential and what would be influential in your decision, and then allowed them to check off and write in what they thought. Of course, we looked at HPV knowledge and then a series of theory-based correlates as well. And the theory-based correlates were based on the health belief model and the theory of planned behavior. Unfortunately, some of the subscales we used to measure these things fell apart when we looked at inter-item reliability. And the only things we could enter into the analyses as subscales were social norms and severity. So 435 women participated in the survey. On average, there were about 24, about half were married. They were living with about 6 people in their house, and as a household, earned less than $1 a day on average. Many were unemployed, and almost all were Catholic. Just a brief overview of the women who participated. And as we expected, as price increased, these are pesos at the bottom, and there's about 46 pesos to the dollar, to give you a point of reference. And as you see, as it increased above the minimal price, it dropped below 30%. This is acceptance, and stayed below 30%. So I think this graph, even though it's intuitive, is informative in that acceptance, even at the minimal price, was only 50%. And for herd immunity and for cost effectiveness, that is inadequate. So without behavioral strategies, social marketing strategies, the uptake is not going to be where we want it to be. But also without appropriate pricing, those behavioral and social aspects are kind of irrelevant. So both have to go hand in hand. And these are the checklist style items that I mentioned. And they're obviously not mutually exclusive. So women's parents and partners were important in their decision. Even those in upper age ranges were still influenced by their parents, and many were still living with their parents. 2 people who we thought would be influential were not. So based on other research, we thought the healthcare workers would be important, but they weren't. And also based on previous work in the Philippines with vaccines, we thought spiritual leaders would be, and they were not. So we also looked at influential factors. Of course, protection from HPV and cervical cancer were important. But also some more altruistic reasons, like staying healthy for their family, protecting their sex partners from infection. Those things came up as being very important. Also, vaccine safety was critical. But some of these more structural level factors, which I expected to be important, were not. So cost and transportation, time, dosing, et cetera, really were only important for about a third. So on a very practical level, we just asked women, who would you be willing to receive the vaccine from? And overwhelmingly, we saw a gender preference. So and we would not see that, say, in a setting in the US or even in Europe or Australia or wherever, but they clearly preferred female physicians to males and female community health workers to male community health workers. Overall, the women had a high perceived severity of HPV-related conditions. They had high perceived benefits of the vaccine. They had encountered several cues to action, such as diagnosis of a friend or family member with cervical cancer, or exposure to vaccine-promoting media. And they also had strong perceived social support for vaccination and high perceived behavioral control, surprisingly, considering their limited economic circumstances. They did have low levels of HPV knowledge and also low levels of perceived susceptibility. So we entered these theory-based correlates into a set of regression models. We had 1 regression model for each price increment. And, you know, different things came out in bivariate analysis as being important in each one. But overall, there are a few demographic factors, a few attitudinal factors, and a few behavioral items that were entered. So at low price, what we found was that women who said that their mothers were influential in their decision were 73% less likely to accept the vaccine. And I just thought that was a striking finding, and you can see that the confidence interval really supports that this was true and not just a product of the analysis. Also, women who believed that the vaccine would provide better protection during sex, they were almost twice as likely to accept the vaccine, so that perceived benefit was really important. Women who had strong perceived social support for vaccination were 44% more likely to accept the vaccine. And then a kind of counterintuitive finding, and one of these arose in each of the models, is women who had a fear of the needle and syringe were more likely to accept the vaccine. So a little hard to explain. Okay, at moderate price, you see that the mother drops out of the model and the partner enters the model, and I thought this was interesting. And now women who indicate that their partner is influential are nearly half as likely to accept the vaccine. And then women who had strong perceived susceptibility, who had transportation, and who had received this cue to action from a healthcare provider were more likely to accept. But then here's our counterintuitive thing again. Women who said that there would be barriers to their ability to accept the vaccine were more likely to accept it. So, kind of strange. And at high price, a completely different set of correlates. Women who had a history of Pap testing were more likely to accept. Women who had been exposed to some type of vaccine-promoting media were more likely to accept. And women who had time to go get the vaccine were more likely to accept. And I thought it was interesting that we had completely different correlates in terms of different prices, because this hasn't been something that's done in the literature before, and it really shows that that ambiguous one-item measure of vaccine acceptance isn't capturing what we need it to capture. And then our perceived barriers, again. So there were several limitations to the study. First of all, as I mentioned, we looked at vaccine intent and not uptake. And those two can be very different, especially in a setting like this. And I thought it was interesting in kind of candid discussions with the women, we found out that with a three-dose regimen, what they would do is they would receive the first dose, they would send their sister receive the second, and another sister receive the third, so that everybody has some type of protection, and it was more equal in the family. So that would be really interesting to look at in an uptake study about how can we ensure that the same woman is getting all three doses in a country where there's not medical records or really any type of system to link them to care. We use the convenience sample, so obviously there are some issues with participation bias, even though I think we got past that in the first few sessions. As we had more and more women come in for our study, it seemed like we were getting some variety. Response bias, even though we tried to address this with this group setting, I think that it still could have been an issue. And I should go back and mention, too, when we administered these surveys in the group settings, every woman had a paper survey for herself in Cebuano. And then also we had a community-based research assistant read it item by item aloud to the group so that the women understood the items, they would move slowly through the questionnaire, and they had the opportunity to ask questions. So I found that a really effective strategy in administering the surveys. Also in analysis, we had a zillion correlates entered in bivariate analysis and then quite a few entered into the regression. So it increased our likelihood of finding a significant result. Also, there's some difficulty in interpreting those price-based acceptance measures, but I think in this context, it informed more than it limited. So I think it worked for the sample. And in conclusion, of course, I think minimizing vaccine price is critical, but it has to be coupled with a comprehensive strategy that encourages mothers and fathers and partners to support women in receiving the vaccine. So instead of just targeting the individual woman, you really have to target the family. And I think we can gain leverage on the fact that they want to be healthy for their family and for their partners, and use that in social marketing to increase uptake. Also, I think it was clear from the survey that female healthcare providers should be employed in administering this vaccine where possible, or nurses, or female community health workers, but there really should be attention paid to this gender component. And in the Philippines, when I was there, they were marketing the vaccine as a cervical cancer vaccine, with no mention of HPV, no mention of the sexually transmitted nature of it. And I think that given our results, that might not be the most effective way to do this, because so many women wanted to protect themselves during sex, and so many people wanted to protect their partners during sex. And so when you're overlooking the fact that it's linked to HPV, I think you're missing a large part of the population who would accept it for the sexually transmitted reasons. So I think that's something to consider. There might be issues with stigma, but at least should be discussed. And finally, most vaccine acceptance studies have been based on the health belief model, so very much cognitive factors. And if we had done that, I think we would have missed some really important correlates to acceptance, and especially the perceived social norms. So I think the theory of planned behavior in these low-resource settings is a really effective framework for looking at acceptance. And I just want to acknowledge the community-based team and our NGO partner, Island Ventures. So, if there are any questions? Good on time. Oh gosh, okay.
Do you think that the counterintuitive findings might have had something to do with the administration? Like the fact that maybe the person asking the question of the women, that item about perceiving barriers might have been mistranslated?
Yeah, there were a few reasons we thought might explain this, and one is translation. Even though when we ran it back by our staff, they felt like it was translated correctly. The other thing that we could think about is maybe women who were more likely to accept the vaccine had more contact with the healthcare system and realized the risk, whereas women who had not had that contact with the system, maybe these risks weren't even on their radar. So that's the only two explanations we could come up with for those findings.
Considering the low condom use in the Philippines and the very Catholic traditional values, do you think kind of marketing it or describing it as a protection during sex, even though you describe what it protects against,
right,
it might be more broadly interpreted?
Yes.
And cause even lower condom use or, a false sense of security?
Right.
Is that?
I'm actually writing a paper about that now, because on our survey, we ask women, how likely would you be to engage in greater levels of sexual risk behavior if you receive this vaccine? And about 55% said, yes, very likely I would engage in greater levels of risk behavior. So these social marketing campaigns, they really have to be comprehensive in terms of knowledge, too, and be clear about the vaccine's limitations and its abilities. But I do think that, of course, the study included men too, and I'm partial to including them. I still think that marketing as a cervical cancer vaccine is going to make marketing it to men extremely hard. And really, the best way to eliminate that burden is to include both and just use strategies to overcome those barriers.